everybody. Welcome to another ref-bumping edition of Songs in the Key of X. I'm your host, Jeffrey X. Martin of Biff Bam Pop, and here is a little-known fact about me. I love professional wrestling. I love the pageantry and the intensity. I love watching people hurl each other across the ring. My heroes have always been wrestlers, and they still are, it seems. When I can, I write BBP's wrestling column, Around the Loop, which you can find in the archives over there at the site. That's why this week we are highlighting songs performed by professional wrestlers. Not necessarily their entrance themes, although that is a possibility, but this is music recorded by some of your favorite boys and girls in the locker room. But I am not the only fan of the greatest sport in our history at Biff Bam Pop. Here to help me watch grunge leg drop New Jack through a press table is a member of our BBP wrestling watching faction, Sechin Hingu. Hello, sir.
Hello. Hello. I'm wondering if you can say it's a little known fact that you're a wrestling fan, since you do write a weekly column on it.
That may have been a bit of an exaggeration or an under-exaggeration. I don't know. When did you first start watching wrestling?
Oh, wow. I can, you know what? I can pinpoint it almost to the month. Like, I became a regular wrestling fan the day that Hogan lost the title to Andre at that main event by the shenanigans of Ted DiBiase. So that's like 88, 87, 88?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
My mom was always a giant wrestling fan. When she came to Canada from Trinidad to Toronto, as you know, people may know or not, like, is a huge wrestling town. Maple Leaf Gardens was like, everybody went through there. It was like a huge, like the Sheik and all those folks. And my mom was a huge wrestling fan. Not my dad. My mom and her whole family were all super into it. You wouldn't expect this, but my mom's favorite wrestler was Abdullah the Butcher. And I think that might explain a whole lot of things. So, about me.
That's amazing. Oh.
Yeah, and I think almost until the day she died, she thought that Abdullah the Butcher was legitimately from Syria and not wherever he's from. I think he's like...
it's like Pennsylvania or something. Pennsylvania,
very regular place to be from. Nope, she bought into that. I used to go to the matches with her. I used to watch the pay-per-views with her. That was like my bonding thing with my mom, was watching wrestling. So right around, 87, 88 was when I kind of got hooked on it. I had seen matches before then, but it never really grabbed me. That's about where it all started for me, and it's all been downhill.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. I was an old school Georgia Championship Wrestling fan before it turned World Championship Wrestling. And again, my folks got me into it. Every Saturday night, 6:05 on Superstation TBS, right. Man, that was so great. Here's a true story. My mom used to work security at the airport up in Cincinnati, and she got to see a lot of these guys coming through. And I think, if I remember correctly, one night Ric Flair showed her his belt.
Like, meet a different, a whole lot of different things, right?
Exactly.
You think, but
there may be another level to that.
I'm gonna take the cleanest interpretation of that.
Now, I want to state for the record that Sachin and I have never met in person. It's like a magic show.
Yep.
You can be my lovely assistant. And because I like surprises and I like to be surprised, I don't know which song Sachin's chosen for this show. And he doesn't know what songs I've picked out.
Correct.
However, right now, it's time to hop over the top rope and get into the music. Sachin, you drew first blood. What you got?
All right. I feel like I would be deported if I was to choose anything else but this one for my first pick. I think it is not objectively a good song. It is a song that I listen to all the time. It's a song that when I listen to it, it is in my head until probably the next time I hear it, or until, you know, that Jeff Jarrett theme comes in and I can't think of anything else. But it's
I don't know if anything we've picked is an objectively good song.
No, probably not. Maybe not. But it is one of my favorite tag teams as a kid, extremely Canadian. They walked so that Kurt Angle could run with the heels that thought they were babyface gimmick. And it's the Rougeau brothers with All American Boys, performed by Jacques and Ray Rougeau, as well as Jimmy Hart.
We don't like heavy metal. We don't like rock and roll. All we like to listen to is Barry Manilow. Les filles
no word of a lie, I listen to the song all the time. There's so many layers to it, is the thing. Like, even the first couple notes, there's something about it that evokes like a very Canadian Bryan Adams kind of, not the wrestler, Bryan Adams vibe, that it gets me right in the Maple Leaf every time. It's a rock song. They're talking about how they don't like rock music, how they like Barry Manilow, and it sends me down this you know, this train of thought, like, what if they entered to Barry Manilow? So this was their entrance music. To explain to people, I think the Rougeaus are a bit of a deep cut. They're two French Canadian guys, Jacques Rougeau, Ray Rougeau, real life brothers. I'm fairly certain.
I think they were, yeah.
Their whole gimmick, at least at the time that this theme came out, was that they were like, they wanted to be American, and they would walk around with these little American flags, which I guess kind of makes them heels here in Canada, but they were also heels in the States. I can't remember a time that the Rougeaus were like a face team, unless it was maybe when they first debuted. They were always like these kind of like annoying goody two shoes. They really were like the precursor to what the Kurt Angle gimmick became, or like for people that are really like in the know, like the Bo Dallas gimmick later on, that they were these heels. They were bad guys that I think in their minds were good guys, right?
Yeah, I think so. They didn't realize that they were heels.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what was annoying to audiences or to the fans. I think they were like class suck up or you know, teacher's pet kind of thing. But they would still do heel tactics. They were still managed by Jimmy Hart, who did the theme. You're going to see Jimmy pop up a couple times here on my list. I really tried not to pick every song by Jimmy Hart. The thing is, like, this era of WWF, Jimmy Hart and the other composer, Jim Johnston, were so prolific. They did almost everything, every theme that you could think of and all these songs. So yeah, that's my pick. It is a, you know, rock song about how they hate rock music. I really like the instrumentals. The backing vocals are actually pretty on point. Like, it's a genuinely pleasurable song for me to listen to.
Yeah, a lot of Jimmy Hart stuff really was well arranged, if nothing else, even if the lyrics lacked depth.
Subtlety.
Yeah, they were all nuance.
Pretty on the nose, which was probably the brief he was given. He was like, you know, you're making something for the Mountie. You got to say the Mountie in every verse.
Right? Exactly. We are off to a great start. Here is my number 5.
Like Rodney Dangerfield, you get no respect. So come on, off this rack so I can put you in check. Be a man, Hulk. Come on, don't be scared. You're running from Macho, that's what I heard. Be a man, Hulk. Come on, don't be a chump. I never thought Hulk would go wild like a pump. Be a man, Hulk. Come on, don't be scared. You're running from Macho, that's what I heard. Be a man, Hulk. Bully dudes are chump. They call you Hollywood, don't make me laugh, cause your movies and your acting skills are both crap. Your movie's straight to video, the box office can't stand, while I got myself a feature role in Spider-Man.
One of the best things about Macho Man Randy Savage was that we never knew what to expect from him. I don't believe anyone could have anticipated a rap album from Mach, but that's exactly what we got in 2003 when Savage released Be a Man from the album of the same name. Now, Savage had done it all in the business. Two-time WWF World Heavyweight Champion back when it was WWF. King of the Ring 1987, winner of the WWF Intercontinental Championship, four-time World Heavyweight Champion for WCW back when there was WCW. He had a beautiful house and a beautiful wife, but he's probably the most famous for his working relationship with Hulk Hogan. They teamed up, you know, they were the Mega Powers, and they tore the house down. They battled for the affections of Miss Elizabeth, who was Savage's valet and, for a time, his real-life wife. Macho's character was insane. It was grandiose. He was a guy that would be more likely to spit at you than look at you. So, of course, the perfect guy to release a rap album.
Of course. A battle rap album. Like, he put Hogan on blast with this one.
He did, and especially in this song. Now, it's difficult to pick a favorite line from Be a Man, but I think I have to go with, Hollywood Hulkster, you're at the end of your rope, and I'm going to kick you in the butt and wash your mouth out with soap. A dire threat indeed.
Yeah.
Nobody liked this album. I mean, not for real, anyway. Ironically. exactly sure, but that was about it. It sold a whopping 15,000 copies during its release, right?
And too high to me, almost.
Yeah, I know, and there's a reason for that.
15 people are sitting there with this on the shelf. Right. Maybe, or at least in a garage sale somewhere with a storage unit.
Yeah, it's just not that good. That's what I meant when I was like, maybe none of these songs are really good.
But I support the energy. I mean, I don't like Hulk Hogan, and I loved the Macho Man.
There you go.
At that time. The execution might not be great, but the content, sure.
The execution is terrible, and the content is questionable. But thankfully, it wasn't popular enough to tarnish Savage's legacy. He passed away in 2011. Yeah. Your turn. What's your number four?
All right. So my number four, at the risk of going with something extremely similar, I kind of unwittingly or wittingly went with a very similar theme. This is also Jimmy Hart. This is my last Jimmy Hart pick, I promise. And it is also my last pick with American in the titles. It is American Males.
If they want to talk to you, you better not listen. You might wind up in critical condition. American males. 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 American males.
Now, I mean, again, I want to reiterate, none of these songs are objectively good, but this is another song that is, for my money, the biggest earworm in wrestling beat.
That's fair. That's fair.
You listen to this and you're going to be singing it under your breath at the grocery store. You're going to be singing it in the elevator at work. If that is not your experience within the next 24 hours, I'll eat my hat. So the American Males were in WCW. So this is after Jimmy Hart had made the jump over down south to WCW and did a lot of themes for folks down there. And this was for Mark Bagwell and Scotty Riggs, who were homoerotically coded two guys, ultra masculine, look like male strippers more than most wrestlers do.
And more than most male strippers do.
Very true. Yeah. I think they would go into a male strip club and people would be like, that's a little on the nose. A lot of people will remember it for the chorus, which is literally just the words American Males over and over and over again. But there are some questionable lyrics in here, too. And if I'm picking out a line, and I'm not sure if this line is targeted to women in the audience or men, they go, if they want to talk to you, you'd better not listen. You could wind up in critical condition. Now,
what?
Is the song cock blocking them like right off the bat? Like, don't even talk to these guys if they're picking you up.
Because they will drug your drink.
Yeah.
They will roofie you.
You know, fair warning, but maybe not something you put in your theme song. So that's the American Males. And again, you know, Jimmy Hart and his very on-the-nose songwriting. The music, the instrumental is only okay. But this is one that gets stuck in my head. And that's where we end up. With the American Males.
I honestly didn't know there were other lyrics to that song besides the chorus. It sounds dreadful. I'm going to listen to that multiple times. I don't know how far we're straying. No, we're straying really far from that right now. Here's my number four.
You see, if you take a pencil that won't hold lead, looks like a pipe cleaner attached to a head. Add a buggy whip body with a brain that leaks. You got yourself a grit-eating pencil-neck geek. Pencil-neck geek, grit-eating freak, scum-sucking peehead with a lousy physique. He's a one-man, no-gut, losing streak. Nothing but a pencil-neck geek.
That is Classy Freddie Blassie with a song I used to own on a 45 single, Pencil-neck Geek, from 1977.
Wow.
Now you can't.
I didn't know about this one before.
You can't talk deep wrestling history without talking about Blassie. I mean, he made his bones as a heel, maybe one of the best ones ever. Fans hated that guy so much that one threw acid on his back during a match. he was stabbed 21 times. He got injured in the right eye because somebody threw a hard-boiled egg at him. And he beat Japanese wrestler Ricky Dozan so badly that people reportedly passed out because of all the blood. That's an amazing dude right there. And he feuded with guys like Bruno Sammartino and Bobo Brazil.
Everybody, yeah.
Right? He managed the Iron Sheik, rest him, and Ivan Koloff, Nikolai Volkov, George the Animal Steel, of course Hulk Hogan, because Hogan's got his tendrils in every single piece of history, it seems like. But he also managed Muhammad Ali. He managed Ali in 1976 for his match against Antonio Inoki. Wow. That amazes me.
Incredible.
Now, this song, Pencil Neck Geek, is not really a diss track, even though it sounds like it. It's about some guy that Blasty knew when he worked literally as a carny.
Wow. Of course. Of course. Where else are you going to pull your wrestling staff from?
Exactly. So Blasty didn't sing, not really, but you kind of feel that sense of disgust and rancor that he feels towards the subject of the song. Notably, the song was performed by Johnny Legend, who is himself a wrestling manager and a rockabilly musician, and the guitarist is Billy Zoom, who was one of the founders of the pioneering LA punk band X.
What?
Yes.
Incredible.
Isn't that nuts?
Wow.
I have blown your mind.
Imagine these people all in the same room, and it was like the earth opens up, right? Like it's a...
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my number four, and it is, once again, your turn.
All right. So my next one is, I think there's the first one that is actually by, or almost entirely by a performing wrestler. And this is Terry Funk from his 1984 album. And this one is called Roppongi.
Smoking American cigarettes.
I've probably expressed this to you in the past. Terry Funk to me is like pizza, where if you don't like him, you're automatically suspect to me.
Oh yeah, you're on the list.
He can do no wrong. This album comes close, but it's a weirdly soothing album, which is like, okay, that's great. 1984, it's kind of like listening to somebody recording their own karaoke session, but it's like stream of consciousness. Describing women in a bar smoking American cigarettes, dancing. It's like him standing in a room, performing karaoke, describing what he sees in front of him in like a Japanese bar. And it's amazing. It is, you know, his experience in Japan. And so this album was, best I can tell, was recorded in Japan, released in Japan. It had any kind of release over here in the States or over in North America. It is a weirdly beautiful, charming song. And then if you listen to it and then go watch a Terry Funk match, you will experience the most incredible dissonance that I can possibly offer you. So I would suggest queuing up a Terry Funk death match and having this song ready and just throw them on back to back. It'll be probably the best experience you have all night. Like your mind will just reel.
There's a tremendous dichotomy.
Yeah.
Like when Roppongi's over, it feels like you just snap your fingers, like you're in a beat club.
For folks that don't know, I mean, Terry Funk is like, his whole thing in wrestling is being one of the most violent, deranged wrestlers to ever do it, right? Right up there with Foley and all those, he inspired Foley. But then when you hear the song, it is like somebody singing you to sleep. It's incredible.
It's kind of like if you saw Bob Ross punching old people in the face.
Exactly that. Precisely that. Blading, blood everywhere.
Light
going
tubes.
Through barbed wire. Yeah. It's with this song playing in the background, I would love to hear somebody or see somebody edit one of his matches with one of these tracks. in the background. And to be honest, the whole album is like this. It's like easy listening 1984, like jazz karaoke. And all the lyrics are like, it's like right off the dome. It's like he didn't pre-write any of this. It's like he was just like improvising it. I don't know if this is the case, but it sounds to me like he's just recorded it completely off the cuff. And that's beautiful. That's Derek Vaughan.
Yeah. He just called it in the ring, man. He was the studio general. Well, one thing about my chosen artists so far is that they all talk too much. Here's my number three.
I like NASCAR racing. Richard Petty's still the king. Yeah, they call me a redneck, but you know that's a beautiful thing. There's only one thing that I hate, because it's a bunch of crap. I hate rap.
Gather round, kids. Gonna tell you a story. It was WCW in 1999. Now, that should explain everything, but one of the factions on Nitro was the No Limit Soldiers, and they were led by rap impresario Master P. They were supposed to be the good guys. Master P only showed up on WCW television one time, and during that segment, he managed to piss off the audience so badly that the No Limit Soldiers organically became the heels. Their opponents were the West Texas Rednecks, and they were supposed to be the heels, but then Master P threw a birthday cake into the face of Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, so they became the good guys. Now, as part of this angle, the West Texas Rednecks recorded Rap is Crap. The audience loved it. I mean, talk about getting over with the crowd. They hit that demo. They hit that target demo. And that song even got airplay on some radio stations.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it legitimately charted in some areas, right?
Yeah, like, some markets. Yeah. It was really big. Now, the West Texas Rednecks were Kurt Hennig, Bobby Duncombe Jr., there's a blast from the past.
Wow.
Barry and Kendall Windham, and Curly Bill.
who's Curly Bill again?
Curly Bill had already achieved a measure of fame as Ted DiBiase's assistant in WWF, WWF. So
there it is.
Mighty Virgil, the mighty Mike Jones.
Perhaps his finest moment.
I think so. Yeah. The West Texas Rednecks only lasted for 4 months as a stable because, according to Hennig, the group disbanded when none other than Hulk Hogan said, "I can't follow that, brother." So on, who could?
Famously humble guy. Hulk Hogan tossing that out to you, that's high praise. As far as I'm concerned.
Oh, it's high praise, and it's also a death warrant.
Right.
I can't follow that, brother. Oh, well, then we'll be leaving this show. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, what's your next pick, man?
This one, I think, is of my picks anyway, is legitimately one of the better songs. We're going right up to the present. This is current AEW superstar Max Caster. He's dropped a bunch of bangers. This is the first one I'd heard of him. He had dropped tracks before this while he was in the indies, but his first AEW track was a Sean Spears diss track called Not Perfect.
I'm really not afraid of your man Tully Blanchard, original horseman, but now he's a grandpa, about to run circles around you till you cramp up. Saw you at Double or Nothing, pull your pants up, Sean. I'm up in your face like I close talk, about to make you look so stupid like your mohawk does. I think you need to hold on, cuz I'm about to break some news that you might not love. I'm not perfect and neither are you. I'm not perfect and neither are you. I'm not perfect and neither are you, but I'm better in the ring. You gon' see that it's true. Yo, look me in the eyes when I'm speaking to you. Yo, I got a dark side like a demon.
When you said Max Caster, that's not the one I was expecting, so that's great.
Honestly, I love Max's flow. I love the way that he produces his tracks and how they sound. They have like this great like backpack hip hop feel, like a Lupe Fiasco kind of vibe that really kind of speaks to me. It doesn't feel like, you only have to go back to your previous example of Master P and those guys. Like, there's a kind of a way that wrestling rap sounds that this sounds nothing like. It doesn't sound like it's trying too hard. it's a little self-deprecating, more than a little self-deprecating. The video, if you watch it, it's like a play on, again, going back to your last pick, it's like a parody of Kurt Hennig's Mr. Perfect, his original vignettes for WWE, where he was, or WWF at the time, when, you know, you'd see him like sinking baskets or like getting holes in one and all that. And this is kind of a spoof on that, saying, I'm not perfect. And he's like, he's messing up home run drives and all sorts of things. Max is one of the most talented, multi-talented acts in the company, maybe in all of wrestling right now. There's nothing ironic about this. I love this song, and yeah, that's my pick.
If you don't know anything about Caster, you don't even really have to watch one of the acclaimed matches. You just need to watch the entrances. When he comes down the ramp and he's freestyling about the city and about current events, and he says stuff that I don't know how he gets away with it. I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure they've made him tone it down, because he has said some remarkably controversial stuff. But yeah, I really like the guy. And that's not even really my style of music. And I'm like, oh shit, Max is coming on. What's he gonna say now?
What I like about this song and his produced songs are that they're different from his freestyles. Like his freestyles are obviously off the cuff. They're super like edgy and incisive, but these songs have like actual great production. They tie into what he's doing. Like they're a wrestling promo, but like they work as music as well. And I can't think of a whole lot of artists. Like there are wrestlers that rap, Leo Rush, Swerve, etc. There's so many. But Max seamlessly integrates his music and like a wrestling promo, and it works on both levels. I just think it's tremendous. I could have picked 5 Max Caster songs for this list, but nobody wants that. So
I would have picked Narcissist. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Excellent.
I'm going to follow my last country song with another country song, and here it is.
Maybe this will teach you not to try that trash again. And save another woman from your slutty shenanigans.
Again, this is a song that I unironically, is that the word I'm looking for? Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, sure. I'll pronounce it weird. Why not? From the 2010 album Strangers and Angels, that song is unsurprisingly called Dumb Bitch by Mickey James before she became Mickey James Aldis. What a wild career James Aldis has had. Most of her time in the ring was split between the WWE and TNA. She's a 5-time WWE Women's Champion and a 5-time TNA/Impact Wrestling Knockouts World Champion. There was that one storyline in WWE where she feuded with Trish Stratus, and if that's not HLA, I don't know what is.
It was incredible. It was like a single white female kind of.
It really was.
Vibe, right? Yeah.
Mickey's always been a country girl at heart, and her first album was released independently after a crowdfunding campaign brought in over $16,000.
And this is when?
This is 2010.
Oh, wow. That's her first album?
Yes.
Wow.
And the original goal for the crowdfunding campaign was only like $5,000.
Incredible.
So who's the dumb bitch that Mickey's referring to? You know, I mean, it could be anybody in or out of the business. All I know is I like James Aldis's voice quite a bit, and I'm bound to like any tune that uses the phrase slutty shenanigans.
Incredible.
I am surprised at how much I like this song. It reminds me of like Miranda Lambert or Shania Twain after a 3-day whiskey jag. And honestly, just to keep the streak going, let me just mention the name Hulk Hogan, because I feel like we've talked about him in every single...
How can you not? The guy is, like him or not, he's prolific. He is wrestling for a lot of people. You know, his star has fallen significantly especially in the last few years. But you can't talk about wrestling without him. Like, you know, it's just how it is. Like it or not.
We're coming down to it now. What is your number one pick?
I'm going to say these are not necessarily in an order, but this is one that I'm I think I'm proud to say that I introduced you to. It is I was worried you were gonna have to throw it on your list, but this is Rocky Romero and Trent Beretta, Roppongi Vice, singing Roppongi Vice.
Roppongi Nights, Roppongi Lights, kings don't sleep, so don't sleep on the vice. Roppongi, Roppongi, Roppongi Lights, Roppongi Vice, Roppongi, Roppongi, Roppongi Lights, Roppongi Vice, Roppongi, Roppongi, Roppongi Lights, Roppongi Vice, Roppongi, Roppongi.
Beretta and Romero ain't nothing sweet.
Dressed to the nines, eye patch wearing, fur on the bandana, all the curly.
I came so close to putting this on my list. Because I listen to this song a lot.
Me too. This is on my gym playlist. It comes up every time. Again, and I feel like I have to keep qualifying these as, I don't know if they're objectively good anymore. I've listened to it so many times that I have no objective distance from this song to say whether it's good or not. I think the production is pretty okay, if not a little amateurish. What I love the most about this song is Trent's break in the middle, where it's Rocky going Roppongi, Roppongi Vice, Roppongi Vice, and then Trent just comes in. It's like a spoken word in the middle, and it's like a weird echo of Terry Funk's song, where it feels like it's stream of consciousness, and Trent goes in just a voice, not singing, not rapping, nothing.
Roppongi Vice, Roppongi. Stays up real late, drinking in hotels like weirdos, and then we go eat McGriddles from Japanese McDonald's super early in the morning.
Roppongi.
Roppongi. Roppongi.
That's the line. That's it. That's the line. Trent is it's like he's not even trying, and I mean that's the Roppongi Vice energy through and through. I love it. It's like a weird slice of wrestler life in the middle of this song, just like Terry Funk was doing. I don't know if it's conscious or not, probably not. I've never been to a Japanese McDonald's, but the McGriddle is my favorite item from McDonald's, so I hear what he's saying.
You would have to get one just on principle. It's like That Trent part is like a room full of sober people and one really drunk guy.
Yes.
And you ask the drunk guy the meaning of life, and this is what he will tell you.
What is Roppongi Vice? And like, it's like Rocky pulled him into the booth and was like, drop a line. And that's what he came up with. And that's beautiful to me.
Please put out your cigarette and come stand in front of the mic and talk to me for like 20 seconds.
Exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's my number one.
Chef's kiss on that one.
But you know what? In their way, all of my picks are my number one. All of them are special to me in their own way.
Well, I think we're about to get a double whammy of amazing number ones. Ladies and gentlemen, shit's about to hit the fan. This is my number one.
Fortune and fame was his middle name. He climbed as high as the sky. He remains a fame with the training and the prayers and the vitamins too. Don't mess with us. We'll beat you too.
Are you a Hollywood producer?
From 1995, that is indeed Hulk Hogan and the Wrestling Boot Band with the song Hulkster's Back.
You had to do it.
I did. Now, we wouldn't hear about Hulkster's front until that whole Bubba the Love Sponge thing and the Gawker lawsuit. I started my list with Savage, and I've ended it with Hogan, not for any arcane thematic reason. Nothing to do with their relationship, in or out of the ring. I just wanted to sandwich my picks, beginning and ending with songs that were ill-advised. Hulkster's Back tells the tale of a man who moves to California and just really enjoys the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the song is filled with words of inspiration like, check out the pump, brother, and look at that new vein in my tricep. Much like Savage's song, Hulkster's Back is not good. that all.
Not definitely not anymore. Yeah.
It did not age well.
Can I ask you? I can't say that I've listened to this song and I've heard it before, but I haven't listened to it end to end. Does he refer at any point, or are there any inklings of his time as the bassist for Metallica?
I think so. I think there are. Not as for Metallica.
Famous Hulk Hogan lie that he claimed to be the original, tried out for and was offered a spot in the original lineup of Metallica. He told, I mean, we could have a whole show about Hulk Hogan's lies, but that's the one that sticks with me, is that.
What a schmuck. Oh no! I think it's a different song on that album that he talks about being a bass player.
Maybe.
Because I remember hearing it and just being like, "Oh my God, what is happening right now?" But he does say that he was hanging and banging and turning it on during this song. Of course. I mean, come on. The quality of the material doesn't really matter. This is Hogan, and Hogan's going to Hogan his Hulk all over your Hogan, and all the Hulkamaniacs of the world are going to respond in one way or another. When it comes down to it, this song exists, and frankly, I blame myself. You can too. It's fine. I think we should all shoulder the blame.
It's all our fault. We encouraged him.
Yeah, we did. Sash, and I cordially invite you to plug your stuff. Please tell our listeners where it can be found, your full name, your mother's maiden name, and your tax identification.
You can read my writing. What I do is over at Fifth Band Pop. I write a weekly horror column called The Week in Horror, where I run down that week's horror news, anything that I find interesting going on in horror movies. I watch 3 to 5 horror movies a week. And I like to talk about them. I will occasionally do a review, some film festival coverage. I also write some longer form stuff for a site called The Cultural Gutter, which is celebrating. I wasn't there for the whole thing, but it's celebrating its 20th anniversary this year as a website. Go check it out. Our masthead reads reputable writing about disreputable art. We talk about music, movies, visual art. I will occasionally write something about wrestling there because it is art. Yeah, that's where you can find me. If anybody's still using Twitter, I'm at Flashy McFlash, spelled exactly the way you would expect. No spaces. And you can find all my stuff linked through there.
You did that Kota Ibushi piece for The Gutter, didn't you?
I did, yes.
It's so good. You've got to seek that out. That Ibushi piece is great.
I appreciate it.
And I cordially invite you, dear listener, to explore the occult technoscape of Biff Bam Pop. Find something that tickles your fancy wherever your fancy may lie and read it. In fact, I'm willing to bet that you have a 141 2/3 chance of finding something that you like on the site. You see, the numbers don't lie. And you can also follow the BBP Songs in the Key of X playlist on Spotify. A quick search should lead you directly to the thing, which is currently over 12 minutes long. Sashin, thank you for coming on the show, man. What a blast.
Thank you for inviting me. This was so much fun. You introduced me to some new stuff. I think I probably refreshed your memory on a few things that maybe you didn't want to remember.
This has been full of trauma, and I have enjoyed it immensely.
But it wouldn't be wrestling if somebody wasn't being traumatized, right?
So that's exactly right. Oh, that is Sashin Hingu. My name is Jeffrey X. Martin. You've been listening to Songs in the Key of X, and until next time.